Thank you, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, September 1st, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Africa's richest man, Aliko Dangote of Nigeria, says he plans to invest in mining and power generation projects in investment-starved Zimbabwe, as well as set up a large cement factory.
Obviously, it's a positive development. I think it also goes to show that there are a lot of investment potential in Zimbabwe that can actually be realized if probably we do the right thing.
Industry Minister Mike Bima confirms that Zimbabwe has all but abandoned its populist indigenization policy in a desperate bid to lure foreign direct investment.
We are now seeing the fruits of that clarification. Firstly, that it's not true that when we talk about indigenization, we are talking of grabbing shares from an investor. It's not true.
And thousands of villagers in some parts of Mashingo that had been hit hard by the drought are being forced to sell off their prized livestock to feed their families as hunger stalks the drought-prone province.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. The visit to Zimbabwe by Africa's richest man, Nigerian billionaire Ali Dangote, has brought some excitement to the country's beleaguered business community following reports that the businessman is planning to invest in Zimbabwe. Dangote, who has invested more than $400 million into a cement plant in Zambia, met with President Mugabe as well as a number of government ministers yesterday. Dangote told reporters that he had discussed with Mr. Mugabe his interest in investing in power, cement and coal projects. Economic analyst Prosper Chitambara with the Labour and Economic Development Institute of Zimbabwe says Dangote's move to invest in Zimbabwe is welcome, adding it may encourage other potential investors to go to Zimbabwe.
I think number one, obviously it's a positive development. I think it also goes to show that there are a lot of investment potential in Zimbabwe that can actually be realized if probably we do the right things, if we address some of the issues that have been raised by investors. But obviously there are a lot of opportunities, and or most of the assets rather, they are actually at a discount right now because of issues to do with liquidity. So I think investors are trying to snap up assets at a discount so that they can position themselves in the event that the economic situation normalizes in the future.
What about laws like the indigenization law and other laws?
Now, what we've seen or noticed, I think we've noticed a softening of the hardline stance that government had adopted earlier. I think there's been a thawing in terms of that stance. And also, obviously, in some cases, there could be exemptions. So some investors could actually be exempted from having to comply with indigenization and economic empowerment.
That was economic analyst Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Institute of Zimbabwe. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
Meanwhile, Industry Minister Mike Bima today confirmed that Zimbabwe has all but abandoned its populist indigenization policy that has been blamed by many for spooking foreign investors, resulting in Harare's failure to lure foreign direct investment as the economy continues to decline. The indigenization laws compel foreign-owned firms in key sectors of the country's economy, such as mining, to cede a majority stake of at least 51% to indigenous Zimbabweans. The government has in the past tried to amend the controversial law but failed to pacify investors, with Australia last week asking Harare to clarify the indigenisation laws at a mining conference in Perth, the capital of Western Australia, next month, or risk losing out on much-needed foreign direct investment if it does not repeal or amend the policy as a matter of urgency. Bima talks to Blessing Zulu about the 51% requirement that will now only apply to mining.
We started well, but we discovered that things that we never expected to raise the popularity of Zimbabwe would do so. Zimbabwe has been a country through negative publicity and was not even a country expected to exhibit. But because of the nature of what we produced, it became one of the top five in terms of popularity as assessed by the organizers. And this was largely due to the innovation that we took. And that innovation mainly was to promote crocodile meat. And then we added on that innovation of making croco burgers, which became a hot seller. The other product that did well, which we also didn't expect, was really when we transformed the baobab flour to a baobab fruit drink, which has become also very popular at our stand. So it's not surprising that when you get to the Zimbabwean pavilion, you find queues running in circles. Either they are looking, they are waiting for baobab drink, or they are also waiting for the croco burger.
Let's talk briefly, Honorable, about the negative publicity. Do you think government is doing enough to explain its positions to avoid the misconceptions that you are talking about?
I think the government has done much in terms of engagement. And I think particularly the ministry and the Minister of Finance and Economic Planning, and this is evidenced by the number of visits now being made by multilateral institutions, the World Bank, the IMF, the African Development Bank. All that, it doesn't just come. It's as a result of continuous engagement, continuous explanation of telling the story as we see it, the Zimbabwe story. And once you engage people, and people begin to understand the story as it is, you find people appreciate, and they end up, the people who used probably not wanting to talk to you now want to be friends with you.
I think one of the most misunderstood policy is that of indigenization. How is that being addressed by the government to make sure its position is clear to potential investors?
Yeah, we are trying as much as we are possible to try to explain, and I think we are now seeing the fruits of that clarification. Firstly, that it's not true that when we talk about indigenization, we are talking of grabbing shares from an investor. It's not true. Whatever shares that are then end up in the hands of an indigenous person, they have to be paid for. There's nothing for nothing. Any shares have to be paid for. And that's one. Secondly, there is also a misconception that Zimbabwe is talking about a 51-49 split in every undertaking. It's not true. 51-49 is the story when we talk about finite resources. When you talk about mining, where you are talking of depleting resources, where once you mine, that value will never come back. And in a number of countries, it's catered for in a number of royalties and other payments that we make. And in Zimbabwe, we are saying that is the only area where we can say, because of the resources that are now made available to you as an investor, that resource represents our share of the shareholding. And we have had, and companies have come to invest in Zimbabwe, and they see no problem with that.
Trade Minister Mike Bima speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Milan, Italy, where he is attending the Milan Expo. More than 100 countries are exhibiting.
The South African government announced last month that over 12,000 Zimbabwean special permit applicants had been rejected following their bid to remain in that country. South African Minister of Home Affairs Malusi Gigaba has since announced that those granted the permits should collect them by December or lose their status. In the studio today, we have VOA correspondent Anita Powell to give us her perspective on Zimbabweans and other Africans living in South Africa. Anita, welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Can you tell us what is going on in South Africa right now regarding the special permits and Zimbabweans in general?
Sure. As you've just explained, the Minister for Home Affairs, Malusi Gigaba, said that about 12,000 permits have been rejected, but about 200,000 have been adjudicated at this stage. That's about maybe a quarter of the 800,000 that I believe were initially designated. The deadline for applications is at the end of this month. So, you know, assuming all of those people reapply, that is quite a few people to still get through. Their permits will be good until the end of, I believe, 2017, at which point they'll just have to apply for normal residence permits. So that's the situation right now. I mean, that's a lot of people in flux in South Africa, and many of them have been there for a long time. And so it's a difficult situation for many people.
Mm-hmm. And Anita, tell us more about the xenophobic attacks against foreigners. What is the current situation? Are the attacks continuing?
Sure. Thanks, Marvelous. So the attacks have ebbed away to an extent. There is always violence, and it's a very violent country. And so there are regular instances of violence in South Africa. Many of them are targeted against foreign nationals. But the 7 killings that we saw earlier this year, thankfully that has subsided. But I think it's important to say that xenophobia as a concept, as a scourge, has not really subsided in South Africa. There's a lot of xenophobic sentiment, and there's a lot of discrimination that Zimbabweans and other African nationals are reporting when they try to get jobs, when they try to negotiate their way through society. That is continuing, that is pervasive, and that's a very common complaint.
Yeah, shortly after these xenophobic attacks, we saw a lot of people going back to their countries, with countries like Malawi repatriating thousands of their citizens. What is the situation now regarding those who had left? Are you seeing any influx of people coming back to South Africa?
Well, I can speak particularly to Malawi because there were about 4,000 people who were repatriated by their country, and they were told, you know, we've spent this money on you, so now you do have to stay. And, I mean, the harsh economic reality of many countries in southern Africa mm-hmm. has driven many people to go back, often under less than legal circumstances, using border runners, exposing themselves to risk, and putting themselves in a precarious position when they do arrive in South Africa. So we are seeing this happen. The numbers are obviously not easy to track because these people aren't doing it on paper. So, you know, we're seeing it in Malawi. It is probably happening with other countries, but it's just really hard to track.
Now, we also have seen that there is, you know, there hasn't been much talk about xenophobia in recent months. From what you are seeing, do you think it's something that is bubbling beneath the surface, or it's gone completely?
Well, that is hard to say, I suppose. There many critics of the government said that the government has never fully addressed the issue of xenophobia, and that some of the government regulations, including, for example, these new visa restrictions, frankly, don't help. So I think it is bubbling below the surface. And it's unfortunate in a country that calls itself the Rainbow Nation that we can't all live together in peace.
Mm. And Anita, we hear that President Zuma might be getting impeached. What do you know about that?
Yeah, I feel like that's happening maybe every other week in South Africa. We have a very robust parliament and very truculent, loud, insistent opposition from, you know, the Democratic Alliance and the Economic Freedom Fighters Party. The latest is that the DA today is seeking to get an impeachment based on the executive's ignoring of a court order to keep President al-Bashir of Sudan in the country when he last visited. As you know, he's wanted on a war crimes warrant. I think it's important to stress that the ANC, the ruling party, has a very solid majority in parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And to impeach the president, you need a little bit of support from parliament. And I think it's very unlikely that they're going to get it. So this will all, I don't want to take chances and bet on it, but I think the ANC majority makes it fairly unlikely that this will succeed.
Mm-hmm. Now, going back to the issue of xenophobia, when this happened, we had, there were a number of reasons, including, you know, the lack of adequate social support for the locals who are saying they are being taken by foreigners. From what you observed, what were the real reasons for this?
Actually, you have pinpointed one reason. So the latest flare-up of xenophobia started in the coastal city of Durban, where basically, and this is just the story that we've heard, the employees of the factory, who were South African, went on strike. And the owner of the factory went out into the street, and this is a country with 26% unemployment, mind you, and said, I'll hire anybody, especially foreigners, because foreigners aren't, everybody is subject to labor laws in South Africa and the protections. But the perception is that foreign residents are often willing to work for less and work for fewer protections. And that's what sparked the latest outbreak of violence. So, I mean, there is some truth to that, possibly. And that is why I think South Africans are upset. But at the end of the day, President Zuma said this during the AU summit. He said this migration crisis on the continent, people leaving their countries, it's an indictment on all of us, by which he meant leadership. If you don't create enough opportunities at home to keep people at home, they get desperate. And this is what we're seeing.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Anita. That was Anita Powell, VOA correspondent based in Johannesburg. Thank you so much for being with us in the studio.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Coming up, Southern Africans meet in Washington, D.C. for social networking and business opportunities.
At least 19 African Union soldiers were killed in Somalia today in a car bombing and assault on their base by militant group Al-Shabaab.
The State Department has released another 7,000 pages of Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton's emails sent and received when she was Secretary of State.
And a local court clerk in the capital state of Kentucky in the United States has again refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples, despite a recent ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court ordering her to do so. Thousands of villagers in some parts of Mashingo that have been hard hit by drought are being forced to sell off their prized livestock to feed their family as hunger stalks the drought-prone province. Gandri Maramba has more to tell us from the province.
Villagers who spoke with Studio 7 said that they have no other means to survive but to sell their livestock to feed their families. This follows poor rains that were received in the drought-prone village and province as well in some of the parts of the country. Mr. Aaron Edias of Rashai Village under Chief Sharumbira says everywhere he goes in the region, hunger and starvation are staring poor villagers right into their face.
Right now we're having a big problem. we were supposed to reap good harvest, and our crops had reached the tasseling stage, but they dried up. People are now struggling, and they are now surviving on anything, and are now selling or exchanging anything from cattle and goats, even their meat offals to get maize.
Another villager from Muguti village in Chiri, Miss Lilian Gumbo from Muguti village under Chief Majgamangori, says the situation is getting dear for most families, especially as government and non-governmental organizations have not yet started assisting them with food aid. She adds that with many people being laid off in the city, most villagers have no source of income and are struggling to afford the staple maize in local shops, which are selling at exorbitant prices due to demand in the face of mounting food shortages.
We are facing challenges of hunger here because we had little rains. The major problem is that prices of a bag of maize is exorbitant. We are buying it for $9 here, and it's very expensive compared to the urban centers where it is going for $6. We used to get assistance from NGOs like CARE, but this year they have not helped. Government has also done nothing to assist us, and we are in trouble. Our kids are the most affected and are no longer able to go to school.
Other villagers said they fear that lives could be lost in the province if government and well-wishers do not intervene on time, especially to assist child-headed households and grandmothers looking after aged orphans. They add many children have since dropped out of school due to economic hardship, adding the number may come next week when schools open for the third and final term of the year. The World Food Programme recently announced that about 1.5 million Zimbabweans need urgent food aid due to severe food shortages. Mashingo Minister of State Shivai Mahofa declined to comment, but she told ZANU-PF supporters at a meeting in Chiri over the weekend that government is finalizing logistics to distribute food aid to people in the province. Mahofa told the gathering that their administration would prioritize hard-hit areas like Chiri and Mwenezi districts. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mashingo, I am Country Maramba.
Although Zimbabweans have a reputation of being innovative and resilient in the face of hardship, more and more people, including those who are fortunate enough to have formal employment, are increasingly finding it difficult to get by on a daily basis as the country's economic problems continue unabated. Correspondent Taurai Shaba brings us more from Bulawayo.
Bulawayo resident and housewife Nancy Ndlovu says she's anxious that schools are less than a week away from opening for the year's third and final term, as she has no money to pay for her children's school fees. Mrs. Ndlovu has a son in boarding school on the outskirts of Bulawayo and a daughter in primary school. Her husband, a civil servant, is finding it difficult to provide for their small family. Mrs. Ndlovu says with the country's economic problems worsening, she and her husband are finding it more and more difficult to send their children to school and also to afford daily basics.
Hey, it's so difficult these days. We've got children that need to go to school. Before even going to school, the basic food in the home is just difficult to get by. You know, we've got days when we have to have one meal just to stretch whatever food we have. And now it's a week from school's opening. We've got a son who's doing Form 1. We put him in boarding school. And now we're considering, should we pull him out? Because when it comes to fees, we see in 1 week, where can you raise $500 from? And the newspapers are telling us teachers to be laid off. We're now sitting and thinking, could we be the next victims? It's just so hard. We don't know how to plan for the future or what to do.
As a result of high unemployment, many ordinary Zimbabweans have been pushed into the informal sector, where they try to make ends meet through buying and selling all sorts of goods, ranging from vegetables to second-hand clothing. Mrs. Ndlovu says she has also tried to earn an income through such trade, but says she quickly opted out because she was making losses as there are too many people on the street trying to sell something.
In all honesty, I don't think that is for everyone. I've tried selling. You find people will take stuff because sometimes you have no choice. You have to give them to get the money month end. And the difficulties that they are going through, I won't get my money. The goods are not sold on time. And that just puts more pressure because I've taken money from home to say, let me spin it. But I don't think that works for everybody. As for me, it has failed. So now what I have chosen to do is to stretch that salary that we get, and that's the one we'll use.
Another Lao resident who chose to be identified only as Mamoyo also says life is getting tougher for her and her family. Mamoyo's husband has been working in South Africa for nearly 20 years. She says, well, before the country adopted multi-currency usage, she and her husband were able to build a house in Pumula Identity suburb. But the unemployed Mamoyo says she now has to buy and sell vegetables at home in order to help supplement her husband's income, which is now too stretched.
It's tough, of course, because the dollar is hard to... My husband works in South Africa. Nowadays, the rand, since the rand is deteriorated, it's tough. I have to help my husband by selling so that the money I get, I use it for the household to buy food.
24-year-old Zusiso Mageza is the holder of an accounting and finance diploma from a local institution of higher learning. He told Studio 7 his hopes of getting employment immediately after attaining his diploma were crushed, as he found himself competing with thousands of other young job seekers, some with far better qualifications than him. He says his plight worsened when he became an unemployed father.
After my diploma, I was like sitting around doing nothing, waking up every day, going to town to put the CVs, but there was no reply. No, like many other used to end up telling each other false things, going around until I had a baby at that age. I became a father, and life was very, very hard. Being a father, no money, no job.
But unlike most young people who get frustrated and wallow in self-pity in the face of hardships, after identifying an opportunity during a stint in South Africa, Zusiso has just started a company which supplies industrial chemicals to local companies. He quickly admits, however, that it has not been an easy journey. Zusiso says this company holds a lot of promise.
It's quite challenging, but it's like promising. I'll be doing business with quite a few companies because chemical industry is the only surviving industry in Zimbabwe. Let me say it's one of the only surviving industries in Zimbabwe.
Director Reverend Hussein Sranda of the Zimbabwe Institute for Social Transformation says besides its traditional role of ministering, the church is being compelled to assist many people materially as the country's economy continues to tank. But Reverend Sranda says it remains the government's paramount duty to create employment.
We believe that the church, first of all, offers hope to people through encouragement, through helping them not to commit suicide, helping them to face the hardship. But the second thing is we need to be practical. And the practical thing that we are doing as a church has been to encourage Zimbabweans to begin to shift from looking at being employed to looking at employing themselves.
Zimbabwe's economy has been in a free fall since the hotly disputed 2013 elections that brought President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF back into full control of the levers of power in the country after another disputed election in 2008 had resulted in a coalition government. Although President Mugabe promised to create 2 million jobs in 5 years following the 2013 national elections, things have been getting worse, with the Zimbabwean leader blaming Western sanctions for the country's ills. But some observers say the government's failure to respect the rule of law and incompetency, among other things, are largely to blame for the country's war. Reporting for Studio 7 from Lilawayo, this is Taurai Shawa.
Thanks, Taurai. Tomorrow, Michael Kariati will report from Harare on thousands of Zimbabweans who have lost their jobs. Some of them have committed suicide, while others have been admitted to hospital for mental instability. Naboth Magoche is one of those who nearly thought of taking his own life.
You know, when you wake up one day and you find yourself jobless and with no life survival plan, life becomes so hopeless. And this is when I had thought of committing suicide because I had no real any other survival plans, but I'm managing to cope up now.
Stay tuned for Studio 7's Live Talk 8:30 p.m. when our host on The Youth Connection will lead discussions about the many Zimbabweans getting international scholarships. What are they up to afterwards? To join the discussion, text us on 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you right back from our studios.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Marvelous Mklanga Nyahuye.